We both worked on this, and so we have different pieces of information that we want to share with you. So I might switch from this one to Guy's memory stick, just so you know, thank you for this organized. There are many signs, I'll call it VT for short, and these are the signs: emotional numbing, so hard to feel happy or sad or mad, just emotional numbing, depressed mood, no time or energy for oneself, disconnection from loved ones, so social withdrawal, you don't hang out with your spouse, or you are, but you feel very disconnected from your spouse or your partner, a decreased interest in sexual activity, right? Your libido decreases. You have a sense of cynicism about the world and about people, about things in general. Increased sensitivity to violence and disasters in the media. I did a postdoc in New York at Mount Sinai School of Medicine in trauma, and 100% of my cases were kids who had been either sexually or physically abused, but mostly sexually abused. And I had no idea going in how that was going to impact me at the end of the day. Nobody told me that I would apply for these positions. That was going to happen. It's like coming in with some good, you know, work at very low prices. But I started to notice over the year, I didn't start to notice, my husband, then boyfriend at the time, pointed out to me that I would get really upset watching the news, and I would cry easily. I already cry easily. But then I would get really upset hearing about terrible things happening to kids. Not that it doesn't bother me now, but I realized that year was really, really tough in terms of my sensitivity to things. To even being in a bar, hanging out, having some drinks, and you get this feeling like something's happening over there, and it may break out into a fight, I was just out of there. I wanted to be nowhere near violence and people hurting each other. Hold on. Okay. Other signs are nightmares, a sense of despair and hopelessness, both about your clients but also just about yourself and about your life. A diminished sense of self-capacity, which is a fancy term to say your ability to tolerate feelings, your own feelings, is not as healthy and strong as it once was. And your self-worth is being questioned by you. Even though you're doing great and important work, helping traumatized people, I mean, how noble is that? And yet you're questioning somehow your self-worth. A disrupted frame of reference. So there are changes in how you see the world. You know, there's differences between natural disasters and interpersonal trauma. And when you do trauma work of the interpersonal nature, and you become so much more aware of the lack of humanity in people, that people could hurt each other and hurt children in such horrible ways, it's very, very hard not to be impacted by that, right? Not to have your spirituality suffer a bit. Clinicians may start to use drugs or alcohol to escape, right? So they may say, oh, I'm just gonna have like one martini, and one becomes three or four at the end of the night, and they think that's okay, that's cool. But that happens two or three times a week. They may over-identify with their clients. And I mean, that's a difficult one here with Katrina, because you're all from here. How do you not over-identify with your clients? It would be kind of strange if you didn't. But you start to over-identify with their particular situation without a healthy sense of distance between their situation and yours, and your ability to help them in their situation. If you're from the same race or ethnic group as your client who's been going through trauma, for people of color, that's very challenging. It's that much more painful. I know it from my experience. I know it from colleagues who I talk to. And it's very important to be aware of that. I'm not saying these things go away, but you need to do this work with an awareness that these things may happen so you can prevent them from happening. Also, same gender for women who do, you know, work with sexual abuse survivors. Very challenging, because all women know that that could happen to them, right? We can all be victims. Now, I don't know if you want to talk about prevention instead of going to this slide, talk about your piece. Yeah? Okay. So we were talking together about how do you work towards being aware of vicarious traumatization, and that no one is immune when you do this work, and how do you try to prevent it, or at least not let it overpower you? And these are some of the things that we came up with, but some of you may have other things that you have found to be helpful. One is you need to know yourself. You need to know your limits. How much of this work can you do? The nature of the work, the age of the clients, the things that they've been through, how many clients can you see? Hindsight really is 20/20. If you were to ask me again to do a postdoc where 100% of my caseload was going to be traumatized kids, I would say no way. Not enough. You couldn't pay me more to do it. I would now know that I would need to balance it out, and I would have negotiated with, I'll do, you know, X number of clients that have been through this, but then X number of clients who have these other kinds of difficulties. So for any of you that are doing that kind of work, you don't have that luxury right now, but you do have sometimes the luxury of how much time are you going to spend doing this work? So you need to take care of yourself first, otherwise you can't help anybody. Have a sense of your past traumas. So if you have been through pretty severe stuff that's pretty similar to the stuff your clients have been through, you need to either know that you've been through your own therapy, whatever that means for you. So it doesn't have to be therapy defined the traditional way, whatever that means for you. Be very careful before you venture into trauma work if you haven't processed your own traumas. You need to find balance. You need to maintain a connection with your partner, with friends and family, especially those people who have not been so affected by the trauma. Now here in Katrina, maybe that means telephone conversations with people in other parts of the country that you're close to who haven't been as affected, because it's very tricky to only immerse yourself in this. You need to take care of yourself. We tell our clients this all the time, but we often don't take this advice, right? You need to get enough sleep, go to bed around the same time of the night, right? You need to have your sleep be regulated. You need to eat healthy. You need to limit the amount of alcohol and caffeine. You need to exercise, even if it's just a walk around the block, right? You need to exercise your body. If you don't meditate, you should think about meditating. You don't need to go to some fancy place to meditate, right? If you are spiritual and religious, you need to maintain your practice that keeps you feeling stable and sane. You need to take advantage of, and this first one is more, I guess, in the professional sphere, of peer supervision or consultation. Just talking to other people who do similar work to normalize your reactions. In this postdoc program, no one ever mentioned vicarious traumatization. I was there for 7 months, and the staff would get together and talk about the clients, and everybody would go up into their office, and I would think, isn't there any safe place for us as professionals to sit down and say, whatever, I felt horrible after that girl left my office. I wanted to cry. I want to adopt her. There's no safe place to talk about this. And the few times that I got brave enough to bring it up, I thought, do I seem like I'm weak to them because I'm the one having, you know, these reactions? We all have these reactions, and we need to be able to share this with one another. Second point that I told you, I hardly watch local news. It's very sensational. I think their goal is just to scare you so you never leave your home, but I don't know. Do things that you find gratifying, whatever the hobby is. Even though it's a situation of disaster, you need to find even a few minutes in the day to do something that lets you escape. Read a book that's not related to anything here. Something. Listen to music that cheers you up. Right? Any little thing that helps you to feel better. Journaling. If you're able to take the time out to just write your thoughts out, just to create some distance between your thoughts and your feelings and put it in a perspective. Get a massage. And maybe people can't afford a professional massage, but get a massage from somebody. Ask them to just rub your shoulders, your friend, your good friend, your partner. Right? Watch funny movies, God had suggested, definitely. For me, at the end of a long week with all this crazy work that we do, sometimes my husband will say, oh, let's go watch this movie, and I know it's a scary flick. I'm like, no, go with your friends. I'm going to watch some silly, funny chick flick, as he calls it. But I need that, right? I need to have some kind of sense and balance at the end of my week. Enjoy the moment, because after all, you are alive. Yes. And I think there was one slide that I may have. Oh, well, Guy had said, do not do this work alone. Make money. Well,
you already got this, yes? Good?
Yes, sir.
Folks, the truth is that in doing trauma work, the most common self-destructive negative behavior we engage in is overeating. The most common behavior that should be monitored by professionals who do this work is our eating behavior. And then after that is our intake of alcohol behavior. I went to Lima Peru back in 95. I used to do some work with the federal law enforcement agency that has people, has a worldwide mission. And there was an airplane with five agents that were killed, fell, airplane crashed in the jungle. And so I went to Lima to work with the aftermath of that. And it was the night that they were loading all the caskets onto the airplane to bring it back to the United States. I can't tell you. I stopped counting how many drinks I had when I got to 20. That much. That's not me. I have two glasses of wine, I'm done, you know, ready to sleep. But we stayed up all day, all night, and then the next day we started drinking, and the next night, and then when we were finally done, and they were getting ready to put the caskets on the C-130, it was 5 o'clock in the morning, and we had had a whole lot more to drink than I had ever drank before in my whole life. We need to watch that. It's really deep. The other thing that we really need to do in trauma work is to get enough sleep. Not getting enough sleep, you figure, well, I can go a few more hours. And you probably can. And then what happens is when you get ready to go home, especially if you're driving, and if you're driving on a highway, road hypnosis gets you. You realize, oh, I passed my exit, 3 exits back. You were asleep. You were asleep. And the danger of that is that ordinarily, this is coming out of Carnegie Mellon Institute has a center for research on trucks. They study people who drive 18 wheels. And their research is very clear. Between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. every day, 1 in 5 18-wheeler drivers is asleep behind the wheel. Completely asleep. And if they're behind you, they don't know. If they're asleep and you're asleep, somebody's in a lot of trouble. Somebody's in a lot of trouble. You know, like I said, I've worked with a lot of police departments. We have a situation where one of our officers is injured. We don't ask the family to come because we know what happens. They get in the car, they drive too fast, they're scared, they're worried, they're bad, and they wind up in the ditch. So don't do that to yourself. Get enough sleep. Watch the alcohol. Watch them. And those ribs. Those ribs are deadly, folks. They're deadly. And you know, actually, we'd have to talk a lot about stress and what it leads to. People who die of cardiovascular disease, they've stressed themselves to death. And they have, what they've done is they've treated their stress with food, and the food has killed them. And that's us, folks. That's us. That's us. I tell my cops the average number of monthly retirement checks collected by police officers is 25. That's 2 years in 1 month. So you can expect to live that long when you retire. And what does that? Cardiovascular disease. Why is that? Stress plus ribs. Okay, let's see. You don't have to write all this down. It's going to be on the website. You're going to be able to pull it off the website and do it for yourself. Really think about it. To do this work, you really have to do a lot of pre-planning. Because in the moment, call comes, you got to go, you got to be there tomorrow. That is not the time to be. You're too late at that point. You have to take care of your personal business. Now people say, well, what kind of person? Well, do you have a will? If you have a will, raise it. Now those people who raise their hands, y'all are in trouble. Because you know what happens? Mostly, you made your will 10 years ago. And you haven't changed anything in it. I talked to a friend of mine, the widow of a police officer who was killed 9/11. His widow, his second wife. When he died 9/11, his house, his boat, his car, their property in Maine were all still in his name and his first wife's name. Oh. His life insurance policy and his retirement benefits were all still in his first wife's name. His wife, his widow, his widow wound up having to borrow money to bury him. After 9/11, everybody wanted to get $5 million, so it worked out. But don't do that, folks. Don't do that. You made a will 10 years ago. Who did you leave your stuff to? Is it who you want to have your stuff to today? Because that's what the law goes by, right? What you wrote down. You know, you said, this wife of mine, I want her to have everything. But then you got divorced. You got another wife, you divorced that one, you got another wife, man, you have a girlfriend you live with because you're not living with the wife anymore. Something else. In death, and I talked a little bit about death notification because you wind up doing it. And you really need to have a whole 2-day class on death notification. Really a way to do it, a way not to do it. You really hurt people if you do it wrong. But death notification is very important. Now, what is that? How many of you have a durable power of attorney for healthcare? That's a document that says who's going to make medical decisions for you if you cannot make them for yourself. You're laying there on the street in a coma. They bring you into the hospital. The doctors look at you and they tell the psychologist, the one of you that's there, the pastor, you're the local mental health person. There's none left to guys see where the brain function is. Flat line. What we'd like to do is have the organ transplant team come down and do an assessment to see what they can harvest. And you're the mental health person, and you're there. And you know what Guy Seymour's wife, who was in charge, you have written down the rule about. She's going to say, oh, no, 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 no. I see him. He responds to my touch. I whisper in his ear, and his eyelids flutter. You know, it's random behavior. It's random neurological fire. But we want to believe. We want to believe. And then there's all those stories. You know, the guy in Tennessee, he's in a coma 17 years, and he woke up. He woke up, he had a conversation, he was awake for 2 days, and then he died. But at least he woke up, right? So what is Guy Seymour's wife saying? Oh, no, no, no. The miracle is going to happen. We have to at least see how this plays out. Flat line, right? Flat line. So if you don't want to be kept alive under those circumstances, make sure you pick the right person. My wife is not the person to make medical decisions for me if I can't make them for myself. She loves me too much. I have a good friend who is an evil, you know, and she's sorry, my wife's name is Chris. Her name is Chris. I'll be there in the hospital, you know what? I'll be making those decisions. I'll be telling them to pull the plug, and I don't want to hear nothing from you. So, if you don't want wives, spouses, children, and parents cannot make the decision to pull the plug. in my experience. They're always hoping for God. So if you don't want to be kept alive beyond the point at which the heart of transplantation comes back and says, you know, he's been in this coma for 9 days, stuff is settled in his organs, we can't use them anymore. 11 people will die because we weren't able to harvest his organs. 11. I don't want to be in that situation. But my wife loves me too much, and she's not going to say full of time. So it's my friend Adrian who has the power of durable power of attorney for help. He's the one that's going to make those medical decisions for me if I can't make them for myself. But you need to have one of those documents. Because if you don't, folks, the law is that they may not take anything from you if you're not an organ. They can't take anything from you. And I'll tell you my simple story. I used to be the boss of police. We had a police lieutenant and his wife who were in an accident on Thanksgiving Day driving home. He hit his head on the windshield and was dead. They brought them both into the emergency room. Same blood type, 1 year difference in age, 8 children, she was an organ donor, and he was not. They both died. The surgeon said to me, hey, Doc, we can do this. They're right here. I said, no, don't do that. You'll lose your medical license. Somebody's going to tell. You know, you won't ever practice again. Don't do that. They both died. 8 children were orphaned that day. Okay. So, if you want to be an organ donor, you have to write it down at the top. If you don't want to be an organ donor, don't do it. They can't take. If you want to go to heaven with everything you have inside, do nothing. Do nothing. Me, I don't want to be in the prom. We had a long argument in my family about slots and plots. I don't want to be in the prom. And the slots are only leases. You can't buy a slot. You know, slot column bearing in your church, you can't buy it. 99 years, as long as you lease it, you can get. After 99 years, out you come, in goes the next one. So, now plots are real estate. You own them. You know, you buy a double wide, double deep, or triple wide, double deep. You got to put a concrete liner in it. Well, 99 years later, somebody's still running that because they know they got leases. They got paid for those leases. It's the 99th year, and I'm ready to turn over these leases, right? But you have to decide what you want. You want to remain, like me. I'm an organ donor. Take what you can use. The rest of it, I want you to burn it up, and I want you to qualify because the other thing you have to know about cremation is, after you're cremated, all your bones are still there. You only get ashes by pulverization. So you have to have cremation with pulverization. If you have cremation with no pulverization, you're still going to have bones.
Wow.
Some people like that. They like being able to take those bones and bury them in the backyard. Me, I want the whole funeral thing. I want to be laying in the casket. I want all the old girlfriends to come and say, oh, he looks so good. But then afterwards, I want to be cremated. And they have run the casket. You rent the casket, you have the service. At the end of the service, they take you out of the casket. Take you to the crematory, they strip the casket, put new stuff inside, and it's ready for the next run. All that stuff works, and it's much less expensive. To bury somebody in the ground today, you better leave about $18,000. To cremate somebody, it's about $1,200. To do the casket, rental, and cremation, it's only about $600. Now, folks, number 3 is really make color copies.
She's looking for Bobby playing in the bar around you.
Make color copies of your driver's license and your passport. If you don't have a passport, raise your hand.
Well, I had one before.
You all are not ready for trouble. You gotta get a passport. But again, in these United States of America, Homeland Security has said driver's licenses are no longer reliable items of identification. In this country, in these United States,
you're not going to be able to go
in these United States, the driver's license is no longer reliable for identification. So if you travel outside this country, you better have a passport. If people raise concerns about your identity, but if you're doing trauma work, you don't know where you're going to be or what you're going to need, you better have a passport. Make color copies, give one to the people that leave it at home. Bring one with you. Copies of your health insurance card. If you have a do not resuscitate, or make a copy of that, bring it with you. When you leave home, when you're responding to the situation, establish the time you're going to call. And call if people worry. If you say, I'm going to call at 11 o'clock and that midnight gets here, if you have a call, people begin to worry. What happened to you? Do not take the family's only means of transportation. I can't tell you how many times I've been on the scene and I see a mental health professional drive up in a family car. I have to tell them, if you can't come on the site until you come with somebody else. Mm-hmm. I would send your team member to follow you home while you drop the family car and come back and bring it. But don't take the families off. All that means is they're going to be mad at you the whole time you're gone. And you're going to be thinking about it. You're going to be thinking, don't do anything that's going to distract us. Medicines, all of us that are old like me, we have medicines that we need. Make sure you bring a whole set of medicines with you. A new set. What I've done over the months is I get extra medicines. I have 2 weeks of life. Just sit, waiting for the call. It says, we need you somewhere tomorrow. And then I have 2 weeks of life. You will need, the most common injury in the aftermath of hurricanes is roofing nails in the foot. The most common injury. What the hurricane does is it takes the roof off. Where do you think those roofing nails go? On the ground.
In the garbage.
You're walking around with a lot of water, and you don't have thick rubber-soled boots. You step on something, and you'll be looking for your tetanus shots. So make sure you're up to date on your tetanus shots. If you think you're going to be in a place like Louisiana, make sure you get all the other shots. Dysentery, malaria. All those other things. Now, folks, when in Hurricane Andrew in Miami, I was on the Washington. The Washington. We picked up clothes with people who were out in the field and brought them back to a safe location where we washed them. Right. And the best thing was when you were the one delivering the food. People love you. Ah! Here comes fresh underwear. Man, that's a major accomplishment. So make sure you have at least one change of underwear. If you think you might be out there for a week or so, choose your underwear so that it's that wash and wear and dries fast. You can rinse it out. Wear pants that dry easy. Water. You don't want it to be wet. Clammy and sticking to your bones. But material that's strong enough. There's quite a bit of clothing now to build that way. Even in this heat, if there's wind, you'll get cooked. So wear a couple layers of clothing on top. You know, a t-shirt and then another shirt on top. Usually in the top. Your credentials and your money need to be in a waterproof bag. It doesn't help you if it's all waterlogged, soggy, with nobody to read. Get a waterproof pouch, and you'll keep your credentials. And by the way, your credentials should have your blood type on it. And any allergies you have, especially allergies to medicine. Make sure you have enough water for you and for your partner. You and your team, bring water for two. Keep hard candy in your pouch. That'll keep your mouth moist. Give you a little extra. We talked about sugar beets. Red Cross places are usually going to have those. They really will. They really will. Folks, communication is critical. You're going to have a cell phone. Do two things. A, you need a backup battery. And B, you need a mobile charger. Because where you are, it's probably not going to be any electricity. You know, house electricity? Gone. But somebody's going to have a car. You can stick your charger in the lighter and charge it. But you need one of those. And if you have all your information on your PDA, which I don't recommend, because electronics get messed up with water. But if you would keep all your stuff on a PDA, make sure you have something that charges the PDA. The last thing you want to be is ready to give this referral to this agency that you know is really going to help this person, and your PDA is dead. You can't fool with us. My wife and I have arguments about this. She is a contact lens person, a glasses person. I don't even recognize myself. She can't stand herself with the glasses. But if you're going to a disaster, wear the glasses for us. Bring an extra set. Because contact lenses, you need clean water. You may not be someplace where you have to. Don't rely on them. Clean water is a special gift. It's not an automatic occurrence. Contact lenses, as I say, this is controversial. You can never plan enough. You really can't. You can't prepare enough. You can't know your team members well enough. You can't know the people who are next to your parish, their team members well enough. Practice, 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 practice. Simulation, role plays, tabletops. Make the list of resources. Pass them around. Laminate them so if you have them in the rain, they won't be completely useless. Plan, 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 prepare, 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 practice, practice, practice. And we're done. Thank you for your attention.